And welcome to another edition of By the Book. My name is Nahum Siegel. This is the Nahum Siegel Network, jmnam.org, nahumsiegel.com. And every single week, courtesy of our friends at Koren Publishers and Magid Books, we get the opportunity to speak with a prominent author about a current or upcoming work. And today is no exception. We're going to be analyzing Drushot Ledorot, a commentary for the ages, which is about to... a treatise to the volume on Sefer Shmos. And I thank Koren Publishers. You can look them up online, korenpub.com, K-O-R-E-N-pub.com, K-O-R-E-N-pub.com. Our time with our guest is limited, so we'll leave some of our promotional material for the tail end of the program. I do want to, however, mention that there is a special for all Nahum Siegel Network listeners when you order a subscription to the print edition of the Koren Talmud Bavli. You do get the free digital edition. The digital is compatible on all mobile devices, has a $10 value for each volume, and it's perfect for travel or to print before Shabbat. Go to korenpub.com and use the promo code JM in the AM as you check out. Rabbi Jacob J. Schachter is University Professor of Jewish History and Jewish Thought and Senior Scholar at the Center for the Jewish Future, Yeshiva University. Rabbi Schachter is also a contributor writer in Magid Books, Radical Responsibility, celebrating the thought of Chief Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks. And now, Drushot Ledorot, a commentary for the ages, is set to release its volume on Shmos. It's a multi-volume series based on sermons given by Rabbi Norman Lamb in his early years as a synagogue rabbi. The essays fuse Torah wisdom with the most gripping socio-political issues of the mid-20th century, rebuilding after the Holocaust, dealing with the Cuban Missile Crisis, America's relationship to the newly born state of Israel, the sanctity of the family unit, and more. Rabbi Lamb, even as a young synagogue rabbi, demonstrated masterful pedagogy, deep intellectual rigor, warmth, passion, and sophistication. His challenge, along with other American Orthodox rabbis at that time, was to present traditional Judaism in a way that would be relevant and compelling to a population that was quickly abandoning tradition. Drushot Ledorot is a series that, even half a century after these sermons were first delivered, remain as compelling as ever. Forwards included by Jacob J. Schachter, our guest, and Dr. Meir Soloveitchik. Rabbi Schachter, welcome to Buy the Book on the Nahum Siegel Network.
Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to be here.
I appreciate that. I remember reading the Brachos volume of Drushot Ledorot and feeling that the more things change, the more they stay the same. Did you get that feeling as you started preparing for the release of the Exodus volume?
Very much so. And in fact, that is a... in a sense, a reflection of the current reality, and it's also a tribute to Rabbi Lamb or Dr. Lamb's methodology and darshanic excellence to be able to take themes that are timeless, themes that are consistently relevant, themes that speak to the human condition that doesn't change, themes that speak to the reality of the Jew in the world changes, and if it does change, it changes in a way that still makes his words relevant. And I think what we have here is somebody who's a master darshan who's able to address the issues of the day in a very thoughtful and compelling way. And I think that a great deal of the resurgence and self-confidence and growth of contemporary orthodoxy owes its existence to Dr. Lamb and others who held the fort in those early years and presented orthodoxy in a very sophisticated and compelling way.
Oh, no question about it. So if all that has stayed the same, if the message or the themes have been consistent over all these years and decades, and I think if we go through Jewish history, we could argue centuries and millennium, if that's the case, then what is it that changes? Is it conditions? Is it attitudes in the Jewish world? Is it simply circumstances that make things a lot different than the quote-unquote Hamon Am among the populace?
I think what changes is the ongoing challenge more and more that contemporary American culture poses to Jews who want to engage in Jewish life and enabling Jews who don't want to engage in Jewish life to do so with a greater amount of ease. Even those who don't make any conscious decision not to engage in Jewish life, the openness of the society, the willingness of the general culture around us to welcome us, to embrace us, the ability of young men and women to attend any universities that they want, to have any jobs that we want. On the one hand, it's a wonderful bracha. On the other hand, it's a tremendous challenge. And as we see the rates of intermarriage rising, it's something that always existed. In fact, it existed even when we were first born as a people here in the United States. It's a very interesting story about an intermarriage in the 18th century. So intermarriage is always a part of our national experience here in this wonderful country in which we live. But it's getting harder and more intense. And so it's not a different challenge, but I think it's a more powerful challenge. And the kinds of issues that were addressed then need to be addressed now with perhaps even greater urgency.
All right, by Dr. Jacob J. Schachter with us. The these lessons that the preacher, the lecturer, the orator, the rabbi is trying to convey to his audience, to his congregation, are they easier to learn through the lessons of Bereishis than the lessons of Exodus, or is it the opposite, or are they just so different?
That's an interesting question. I think that one who analyzes the biblical text will find messages that are deeply important, deeply resonant, very much current, and address the issues of the day, even in Sefer Vayikra. Just wait till you read Dr. Lamb on Vayikra, and you'll think that, oh my God, what can he say about Korbanos?
Right.
And Korbanos are going to be as relevant in the 21st century as they were in the 20th, as they were in the second, or in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. We're talking here about values. We're talking here about ideals that can be extracted from details that don't, on the face of them, seem to be relevant, and can be brought to bear on the issues of the day. And it's always a challenge. I was a pulpit rabbi myself for close to 30 years. And Vayikra always posed a particular challenge because it doesn't have the same kind of a narrative that we have certainly in Bereishis and even in Shmos. We get back to it again in Bamidbar.
Right.
But there's an enormous amount of material from various halachos, from various little tiny behaviors or practices from which one can deduce overarching messages.
See, I still have a little kid or two in the house. I always am sympathetic to the teachers after Parshas Yisro, frankly, because I wonder what they're going to do. They usually drift into their Purim Pesach material
around
that. Yeah,
thank God Purim shows up right at the right time, and that's certainly helpful. You're right. The latter end of Shmos poses particular problems because, you know, Truma Tetzavik, he sees of a Yaakov Pikudei is Mishkan and Big Day Kahuna and Mishkan and Big Day Kahuna, but there's enough there. The challenge is when you're in your fifth year or in your tenth year in your pulpit and you squeezed out whatever you could already in the previous 5-6 years, so then it's a constant ongoing challenge to mine the text for even new details, but that's not an issue.
So
it's the Torah is so incredible, as you know, and the amount of material there is endless, and it's always relevant.
So, and you know Rabbi Lamb obviously very well, but you would then conjecture that when Thursday and Friday showed up during the week, he was not panicking at any parsha within the Torah. He was able to incorporate everything that that he wanted to in terms of current events and current situations affecting the Jewish world straight into that week's portion.
Yes, that is the case. In fact, you're right. I am blessed to have a very warm relationship. I followed him as the rabbi of the Jewish Center,
right,
not directly, after he completed his tenure in 1976 and went on to become the president of Yeshiva University. Rabbi Isaac Bernstein, Zichrono Livracha, became the rabbi of the shul. He was there for about 4 years. I came in 81, and I had the privilege of having Dr. Lamb in the congregation and listening to my sermons every Shabbos, which was quite a challenge for me, but he was always gracious. And he actually told me that he began his thinking about his sermon for Shabbos on Motzoi Shabbos after the previous Shabbos.
Right.
So we're talking here about somebody who's not walking around on Thursday and Friday panicking and making calls and trying to figure out what am I going to say, but he's already on top of the curve, well on top of the curve. And what's relevant here and what's important is the kinds of materials that he drew upon for the sermons, and Bereishis is out, and hopefully people have a chance to read it and recognize this, are broad-ranging. He's talking about novels. He's talking about magazine articles. He's talking about books. He's talking about newspaper op-eds. He's constantly well-read, constantly on top of what it is that's going on, what are some of the social issues, what are some of the challenges of the time, and using all of that to be able to then construct and hone in as the week progresses a message that will be exactly on target for his community and for his congregation when Chavez arrives.
Yeah, one of the I was looking at one of his sermons on Vayetze. So within a second, you realize that President Roosevelt is in it, and a famous World War I commander is in it.
Yeah. And what's so incredible is that you could just substitute President Roosevelt or a famous World War commander and whatever the particular issue is, and then extract it to our own times and becomes even more relevant.
Right, no question.
I was thinking about there's one drasha he has. I mean, just in Shmos, it's just so incredible. He has one about anonymity and about the fact that in Parshas B'Shalach there's no reference to Dasan Va'aviram in the Torah. The Torah just says Anoshim, and Rashi says it's a reference to Dasan and Aviram, and the question is why? And he goes into this whole analysis of the different aspects or facets of anonymity, and he gets to the anonymous letter writer, and he talks about anonymity as a function of spinelessness or gutlessness. Mm. And he's very upset about that, and he says that he never reads those letters that are not signed. He doesn't have any respect for them. Now, this sermon was delivered in 1974, and we're now in 2014, and we could substitute letter writer for blog or for email, and it's more relevant than ever. So what's so significant here and what's so important and what's so timeless is that whatever issues he was dealing with then are not only specific issues, but issues that are overarching and transcending of the specificity of that particular context.
One of the notes that was given to me in advance of this conversation is that these essays are actually in the Yeshiva University archives, that Rabbi Lamb's sermons are treated as such and are preserved as such?
Yes. There is something called the Lamb Legacy on the YU archives. President Joel, a number of years ago, as an expression of great respect for his predecessor, wanted to do something at YU that would continue Rabbi Lamb's influence for L'dore, Dore, Dore, Doros. And one of the things was that he established the Lamb Legacy online. And Dr. Lamb was very gracious to give to YU, and it's online, the original copies, the typed out copies with his notes in the Hebrew written in his handwriting, some notes, which is now accessible online. So there are a lot more. There are many more sermons online. What we have in front of us in these volumes in the Drashos LeDorot series are a selection that Stu Halpern lovingly and carefully sifted from these sermons that are online. And there you really get a sense of the zeitgeist, because you know you see the typewriter hitting the page,
right,
and you see the old paper as it comes through the way it was scanned. But it's not just then; it's now, and that's what makes it so precious and so important.
Absolutely unbelievable. Rabbi Dr. J.J. Schachter is with us via telephone. Koren Publishers, by the book here at the Nachum Segal Network. Rabbi Schachter has written the foreword to the second volume, and we'll talk more extensively in a moment about the Drushot LeDorot of Exodus, which will be out next month in December. And he has been not just speaking on behalf, but observing from its beginning this whole Magid Books, YU Press publishing relationship. Before we continue specifically on Exodus, Rabbi Schachter, what could you say to our community about Magid and YU together, why it's such an important void that they are filling in the community?
Well, Magid is an imprint of Koren.
Right.
First of all, Koren itself has made a massive, significant contribution to our community. The Koren Sack Sitter, the Machzer, and now the Koren Talmud Bavli, which is just an exceptional opportunity to be able to learn and to be able to understand and to have a broader social and economic and even context from the world of botany, the pictures, the explanations. It's just a tour de force. And at the beginning of the program, you talked about the app, the mobile app that
right.
goes along with that.
Right.
This is, we're now charting incredible new territory in terms of making it possible for people to learn on this kind of a level, to learn Gemara. So Koren, in general, gets a huge yeshikoach for many, many years of contribution to the enhancement of Jewish life and Jewish learning. Maggid is an imprint, and the purpose of Maggid, the focus of Maggid, is to try to bring ideas of current interest to the attention of the world, to make possible writings on very important issues to be able to become more popular. And particularly with YU, we have a very warm and close relationship. You mentioned that I was a participant in the Radical Responsibility, the Chief Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks volume.
Right.
I also had the privilege of writing a contribution for each of the two Mitocha Ohel volumes. These are original essays on the Parshiot, first one on the Parshiot HaShavua, the second one on the Haftorahs, edited by Daniel Feldman, worked on very carefully by Stu Halpern, a collection of essays that bring to one volume the broad spectrum of the faculty, Rosh Yeshiva, administration of Yeshiva University, and it's quite a wonderful achievement.
I have both of those. They're amazing, absolutely amazing. If you follow them week by week.
Follow them week by week, and they speak to this great partnership that the YU and Maggid have on with the focus of bringing this kind of material out. They also... Part of this was a new edition, a 20th anniversary edition of Torah Umada. That's the name of a book that was published 20 years ago by Dr. Lamb. And we're looking forward to more. There are more Mitocha OLs coming out. Actually, I wrote one for another one coming out. I think there's going to be one on the Davening, and there's going to be one on the Moadim. I've got one coming out on the Tefillah of Nachem that is recited on Tisha B'Av. We are excited and we are thrilled to be able to have this kind of a partnership, and we consider it a real bracha to be able to partner with an organization that is doing so much to be able to disseminate a thoughtful, sophisticated, modern Torah values and scholarship to the world at large.
Yeah, and the word I would emphasize there is scholarship. You know, obviously Koren makes this program possible, and we're able to discuss all these books and speak to so many authors because of them, but everyone can understand my bias, but the level of scholarship has to be spoken to, because we are meeting week by week, and I was just discussing this with someone yesterday, we are meeting authors who were never exposed to the vast Jewish community and whose level of scholarship is absolutely remarkable, where knowledge of Tanakh and the Talmud is the base, where it begins, and then it sprouts forth from there.
Mm-hmm.
And in certain circles, that's not always the case. So it's just a remarkable group of people.
Very much so. Yeah, and I'm biased to the extent that I'm a beneficiary of the work that they do, and I would echo that the level of scholarship, which means in my mind not just knowledge, but also psychological sophistication, sensitivity, depth, awareness, current ideas, current concepts, bringing the world into the world of Torah, and bringing the world of Torah into the world, and to do so in such a sophisticated way is a remarkable achievement. A huge yeshe koach to Koren, and a huge yeshe koach to the partnership between Yeshiva University, which is my home, and Maggid Publishing.
And transmission in our industry is a very important term, and the ability they have to transmit is just remarkable. All right, so I was told that someone gave us one sentence about your foreword, or really about the Drashot LeDorot Exodus volume in general, for which you wrote the foreword that's coming out next month. It says it puts the principles of Jewish leadership into historical perspective. It seems that almost every volume, when dealing with works on the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, on the Chumash, it's always about leadership. It may sound like a silly question, but there are so many themes. But in fact, is it always about leadership? Does everything that goes on, especially in Brachos and Shmos, always come back to the way someone dealt with others in the Jewish world?
I appreciate that you asked that question, because the word leadership has been highly overused in contemporary times within the Jewish community, and not only within the Jewish community. You know, we want you to be a leader. You are a leader. We have a lot of leaders. Leadership is important. And at some point, whatever leadership is becomes unclear, because if everybody's a leader, then nobody's a leader. And what does it mean to be a leader?
Right.
So we need to refine more what that is, and there's a tremendous burgeoning industry of works that are now beginning to address this, even within the Jewish community. What does leadership mean? Where do we find leadership? What are the qualities of leadership? And what is not leadership? You can only define something not only by defining what it is, but also by defining what it's not.
Right.
So it can't be everything. Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, leadership itself needs to be refined. And because I'm sensitive to this overuse of leadership, so I think it's important, obviously, but I think that if somebody's going to read this Drushos Ledoros and say, you know, I'm not a leader. I'm a regular guy. I'm a balabas. I'm a sweet person. I have a family. I have a job. I don't go meet with the president, and I don't do all these kinds of things that we normally associate with leadership. But it's very relevant to me. It's relevant to me in my own life. It's relevant to me in my personal life. It's relevant to me in the way I see the world. It's relevant to me in my relationships. It's very much relevant to me. So it's to say that it's focused wholly on leadership, I think, is a mischaracterization. It is very much focused on leadership, but there are also not leaders who would find this very important.
All right, and would incorporate some of those traits and values.
Very much so, like the example that I gave you from Parshas Bishalach about anonymity,
right,
about the importance of anonymity. You know, people sometimes feel like they want to make a name for themselves, and it's wrong. We don't want to give them that. We don't want to give them that opportunity.
Right. So not to belabor the point, but and not to get too much of a preview. We want everyone to go out there and include Exodus, of Drashot LeDarot in their library. But it is so full of potential leaders. And we know about Moses, Moshe Rabbeinu, and we know of others that are obviously in leadership positions. Are there any unsung leaders in Exodus? Are there people that got involved in the Jewish world either before or after the actual Exodus where you would say, sometimes their leadership or leadership skills are overlooked?
I can't think now of somebody in particular, because in a sense it's sort of complicated, because anybody whose name is going to be mentioned or referred to,
right,
would be automatically considered a leader, that they were Zoche, that somehow their persona, their identity was highlighted in the biblical text. But what I would say is, what about B'nai Yisrael? Mm. I mean, Sefer Shmos, Ve'el Shmos, B'nai Yisrael. So we have the list of the ones who came down to Mitzrayim, but we're talking here about a whole people. We're talking about 600,000 plus. And it's their lives, and it's their drama, and it's their unfolding of their destiny, which to me seems to be the core of the book, as it is the core of the Torah. So there are a number of individuals who play what we're going to call a leadership role, but it's not about them only. It's about their impact, and their impact plays itself out in the vast swath of the community as a whole.
Right. A Hasidic Rebbe, and I only use that example because it's probably so ultra obvious, a Hasidic Rebbe is only a Rebbe when he has Hasidim.
Right, a rebbe has chassidim, a rosh yeshiva needs a yeshiva to be a rosh yeshiva,
right,
a rabbi needs a congregation, and I don't want to minimize, obviously I'm not minimizing chas v'shalom, the central role that these incredible people play, but I think it's a mistake if we just focus on that, because we don't recognize where they draw their inspiration from, the impact that they have, the extent to which they have an extraordinary impact. And then we lose sight of the lessons that we could draw for Amcha, the sweet Vayla Tyra Yidden, mm-hmm, who don't consider themselves as leaders, and that's perfectly fine. That's wonderful.
I have the privilege of speaking to Rabbi Jacob J. Schachter with us via telephone as we discuss the Drashot LeDarot series. Shmos will be out during the month of December, and a big thank you to Koren Publishers and Magid Books, korenpub.com, K-O-R-E-N-P-U-B. .com. You alluded earlier to the fact that Rabbi Lam and so many other Jewish leaders, rabbis in the 20th century, mid-20th century especially, were dealing with congregations of people and communities of people, maybe that's more accurate, who were losing interest in orthodoxy. It was difficult to hold on to them. Many circumstances in modern Jewish history led to those types of challenges. Today we read the Pew Report. Today we read about what people's interest is in regard to traditional Judaism. We read how disengaged so many people are from traditional Judaism. And again, I know that a lot of lessons that Rabbi Lam and others from that generation have taught us, especially in works like this, are applicable today. But when you analyze the situation today, compare it to then and tell us if there is hope for this situation, if we're equipped as Jewish leaders to deal with the situation the way it is in 2013.
I'd like to address that penetrating and thoughtful question on two levels. Number one is from the perspective of the Orthodox community, and the other is from the perspective of the I don't like to say non-Orthodox, because it's measuring them by us. I would like to, let's call it the non-traditional or the less traditional or the liberal community,
okay,
or even the secular community.
Okay.
In 1955, Marshall Sklar was a very prominent sociologist and student of Jewish religious thought, wrote a book which included the following sentence. 1955, Orthodox adherents have succeeded in achieving the goal of institutional perpetuation to only a limited extent. The history of their movement in this country can be written in terms of institutional decay. 1955. As late as May of 1964, Look magazine ran a cover story entitled, this is May of 1964, we were both, I believe, born then. And the article cover story, Look magazine, The Vanishing American Jew, and when you turn to the story inside, it predicted the imminent disappearance of Orthodoxy. 1964, we know what happened. Look magazine disappeared.
Right.
But thank God we're doing fine. And that's my first point. My first point is all the Pew reports of the 1950s, the equivalents thereof, if there were any, would have said that Orthodoxy is over. That's done. It's institutional decay. It's finished. It's going to vanish. It's not going to happen. And Baruch Hashem, Shachiyanu v'kiyamanu v'giyanu l'zman hazeh, thank God we're doing well, and we're around, and we're stronger than ever, and hopefully we will continue to grow. Having said that, for me, the Pew Report is actually tragic, not because it shows, the Orthodox, thank God, are doing well, but because it shows, obviously, that we are not doing a good enough job in order to present traditional Judaism or Jewishness in a way that will make it compelling and interesting for those around us, for other Jews who live in this country, to choose to be engaged in.
And all of us are to blame for that?
I think that those who care about the perpetuation of Jewish life in America need to take responsibility for making sure that we take care not only of ourselves, we have to take care of ourselves. Chayecha Kodman, no question. But we need to see what we can do, not just to push the Orthodox numbers up, which we do need to do, but also to stem the tide of the ignorance and the assimilation that is now just a tidal wave around us. How could we be otherwise? Shame on us. Shame on us if we can't construct language, if we can't construct an approach, if we can't construct a language for an ideology that makes what we know, Torah Hashem Temima Meshivas Nefesh, to be compelling for others. That's part of our responsibility. So I'm very concerned about what it is that we're seeing now, and that's why Darshanim, like Rabbi Lamb was, and we need more Sheyirbu Kamo Bi Yisrael today, who could take some of these issues, who could speak in the idiom of the culture, who could relate to the world around us, who are articulate, who are sophisticated, who are well-read, who are learned, not only in Ruach Yisrael Saba, in traditional Jewish life, but understand the world around us and can communicate with that world. That's what we need now desperately. And I think this book and the books in this series and a lot of what Karin and Magid are doing are designed specifically for that. It's not just so that the Orthodox community should become more sophisticated. It's to be able to showcase a set of values and a set of principles in a way that makes them aesthetically pleasing and intellectually fetching for those around us who are searching and who are interested.
Because on the intellectual level, the answers very often are simply just not there.
What do you mean by that?
Meaning that there are people who are, who look at things in a more intellectual fashion,
mm-hmm,
and maybe not in the spiritual or emotional fashion, which might be more readily available in our community, and they don't seem to be satisfied with some of the answers.
Well, you know what? I don't want to be critical of anybody. I would just say that we could do a lot better job. I would even say on both of those levels, mm-hmm, we could do a lot better job on being warm and sweet and welcoming and embracing and encouraging. And when I travel, I do a lot of traveling. And when I travel and I go to a shul and I'll give a sermon, and I was just in one shul this past Shabbos, I'm going to another shul this coming Shabbos, and I'll talk about the fact that I walked into this shul, and it's an incredible shul, it's bursting. And as I was walking through, I noticed on the bookshelf, you have the latest Pnei Yehoshua, and you have the latest edition of the Minchas Chinuch. And that's great. But you know something? I was looking for the yarmulke box. I was actually looking for the doily box. And why do you not have a yarmulke box? I know nothing about this community, but I will tell you that within 1 mile of the door of this shul, there are between 1,000 and 2,000 Jews who are not just not going to this shul, they're not going anywhere. And what are you doing for them? And it's not just what are you doing for them in terms of an intellectual sophistication, which is obviously important, but I think the first entry is warmth, sweetness, warmkeit. You know what Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bozeh means? So it's a principle in the Gemara. All Jews are, and if you ask anybody, they would say, all Jews are responsible
right.
for one another. Atachsidash HaRebbe Amol Gizot, Kol Yisrael Arevim Miloshon Ki Kolech Arev. That all Jews need to be, what's Pshat Hashmi'ini Yes Kolech Ki Kolech Arev? Listen to my voice because your voice is sweet. Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bozeh. We need to be sweet to one another. It's not some kind of a juridical, legal construct that we have a responsibility that if you borrow money and you can't pay and I co-signed, so I'm going to pay. Yeah, I know it's that. But where's the sweetness? Kol Yisrael Arevim. So I think on both levels, we need to up the ante in our own community vis-a-vis the general community.
Understood. But just for a moment then, concentrating on the intellectual end, it seems that one of the frustrations with people who are, and I just heard this from someone last night, it's funny, with people who are searching, with people who would like more concrete answers to their questions, it seems that on the intellectual level, we're not able to present it properly. Is that...
I will grant you that we need more academic, rational, intellectual, well-written books that speak to the issues of the day that are culturally sensitive, that will make it possible for someone to pick up, to be drawn in because the language will be familiar, the cultural categories will be familiar, the terminology will be familiar, and then to take such a person and to go on a journey of intellectual sophistication. And I think this is one of the great blessings of what this publishing company, what Korin and Maggid are doing, and what Dr. Lamb does in this text. I gave this Bereshis volume to many friends of mine who are not part of my community, and they raised an eyebrow. I mean, this is wow.
Yeah.
This man speaks to the issues of my life in a way that resonates with me.
Yeah, anybody out there who doesn't have it, I will recommend try to get it before this Shabbos because the ones on this parsha this week are amazing. Drashot L'Dorot Genesis is out there by Norman Lamb, of course. The Exodus and Leviticus, Shmos and Vayikra will be out soon. If you want to be sure to find out when the publisher is releasing them to the public, korinpub.com, you'll be able to sign up for their email and be up to date. Korinpub, K-O-R-E-N. PUB.com. Rabbi Schachter, is there, and we only have a few minutes left and we will let you go on time, don't worry. Is there a comparison, aside from the comparison of the early 2000s to the 50s and 60s, which I think, again, to any astute observer, as you noted, we see plenty of comparisons. Is there another time in Jewish history or another place where today's generation in the United States looks familiar? Where they were going through the same type of problems, especially vis-a-vis assimilation, a real open society that poses so many difficulties like this?
A lot of people have a misconception that in pre-modern times, everybody was observant, everybody kept 72 minutes after Shabbos, everybody put on Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin, everybody lit Shabbos candles on a regular basis, and that's a mistake. We have evidence for non-observance in medieval times and in pre-modern times, but the culture as a whole was what we call a traditional society. and that these people who deviated, and clearly they even if you don't know, you can just assume that there must have been some, but we actually know, were a Yotze Dofen, were not really, I don't believe, representative of the general ethos of the culture of the overall society. Beginning in the end of the 18th into the beginning of the 19th century with Enlightenment, with Haskalah, with generally movements in the world around us to highlight individualism as opposed to the corporate nature of society, there was a breakdown. There was a breakdown of the traditional society. And by the time we come, and I'm thinking about Germany in the first half of the 19th century as a specific example of a response to your question, where for the first time, without, in the absence of a traditional society, Jews are now faced with choices. The key word is choice.
Right.
In medieval times, you had a choice, but it was a yachid choice. You didn't have a choice as a tzibur, and if you made some choices, there were tremendous implications for those choices that were not helpful to you. You had to be part of a group in order to be able to function. Now everything is choice. Now being, since what I would say is the turn of the 18th into the 19th century, where choice becomes central. I am the sovereign self. I make my own decisions. I am the arbiter of my own destiny. I could determine anything that I want. And that began at that time. Germany, I think, is a good example of this in the first half of the 19th century. But at that point, it became pretty much rampant across the Jewish world, where there's a diminution of the thickness of the traditional society, and ish kol hayashor be'enov yaseh. So we have this, I think, for a long time. I think it's getting more and more challenging, particularly in the United States. Europe today, many Jews in Europe, across Europe, are facing tremendous external challenges. And they're not so welcome into the culture around them. And the issue about walking with a yarmulke here or walking with a yarmulke there, there are massive challenges in many countries in Europe. But in the United States, thank God, Chechionu v'kiyumanu v'giyonu lazman hazeh, we're very much integrated into the culture. On the one hand, it's a blessing. And on the other hand, it's a challenge. So we do have analogs for this in earlier Jewish history. But I don't think at the level and the magnitude that we have today.
No question. It's a great analysis. Finally, when you're asked to write the foreword for Drashot L'Dorot for Shmos, for instance, when you're asked to write that foreword, I am sure you take that responsibility very seriously, to say the least. What is it that you fear, that you might, God forbid, misrepresent what the lectures and sermons were out to accomplish, or the way they were presented? In other words, when you're writing the foreword, what's the goal?
There are two parts to my foreword. The third part, which is the one that you mentioned, I avoided precisely for the reason that you mentioned. The first one is to trace the writing of sermons from medieval times. The earliest treatise that we have on preaching was written in Spain in the 15th century by Rabbi Yosef Ibn Shem Tov, and he already highlights some of the challenges that preachers face. So I do a historical analysis. I'm a historian.
Right.
Besides being a rabbi, I'm also a historian, so I have a historical perspective. And for a couple of pages, I write about 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th century attempts to try to grapple with some of the challenges that preachers had to face. And the second half, including even also into the United States, and I made reference
right
in my foreword to the Marshall Square quote and the Look magazine quote that I mentioned a few moments ago. The second half is as an expression of huge hakaras hatov, derech eretz, I would even say love and affection that I have for Dr. Lamb. I followed him, as I mentioned to you, in the Jewish Center. I left the shul in 2000, and I asked Rabbi Lamb if he could give a public lecture on Shabbos morning as I was winding down. And he started by saying that he felt that he didn't have really a choice to accept my invitation, because after all, I was a Schechter. My name is Schechter, and he's a lamb. So, yeah, how's he going to get out of this? If the Schechter asks the lamb to do something, the lamb is going to do something. So, first of all, it gives you a sense of how sharp he is.
Yep.
And the pun and the chop. But I feel that this Schechter has had and continues to have the utmost respect and affection for Dr. Lamb. And I think his legacy needs to be appreciated, needs to be highlighted, needs to be publicized, needs to be underscored, and as almost a filial responsibility. The second half of my foreword is a paean of praise to this extraordinary giant who graced our world and our community, and Baruch Hashem still does, and made such a difference, such a difference. We stand today tall at Yeshiva University and in the Orthodox Jewish community and beyond because we stand on Dr. Lamb's shoulders.
No question about it. The only thing I would add is that his legacy needs to be celebrated. And
yes.
How right you are. Rabbi Jacob J. Schachter, thank you so much. This has been so enjoyable for me.
Thank you so much. Really a pleasure, always.
A big yasher koach, and we'll certainly alert our audience when the work is available to the public.
Thank you so much, and all the best.
Rabbi Jacob J. Schachter here at the Nachum Segal Network as we again have the opportunity to speak with a brilliant author, a wonderful historian, a great rabbi, and in this case, the writer of the foreword to the next edition of Drashot LeDarot, the next volume of Drashot LeDarot, which made a real splash and was an incredible addition to so many people's libraries when it was released, the Genesis Bracious edition, the lectures of Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb. It made quite an impact, and now Magid and Yeshiva University Press are getting ready for Drashot LeDarot on Exodus and Leviticus, on Shmos and Vayikra. Rabbi Schachter has the foreword for Shmos, and as soon as it's out in the month of December, we will alert you to it. And of course, if you're on the Koren mailing list, you'll receive by email a notice that it's now, that at that time it will have been made available. My thanks to Rabbi Jacob J. Schachter, University Professor of Jewish History and Jewish Thought and Senior Scholar at the Center for the Jewish Future, Yeshiva University. Rabbi Schachter is a contributor writer in Magid Books, Radical Responsibility, celebrating the thought of Chief Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks. I believe that book is now being translated into Hebrew, I've been told, which is pretty remarkable. Drashot LeDarot, a commentary for the ages, a multi-volume series based on sermons given by Rabbi Norman Lamb in his early years as a synagogue rabbi. The essays fuse Torah wisdom with the most gripping socio-political issues of the mid-20th century, including rebuilding after the Holocaust, dealing with the Cuban Missile Crisis, America's relationship to the newly born state of Israel, the sanctity of the family unit, and more. Rabbi Lamb, even as a young synagogue rabbi, demonstrated masterful pedagogy, deep intellectual rigor, warmth, passion, and sophistication. His challenge, along with other American Orthodox rabbis at that time, was to present traditional Judaism in a way that would be relevant and compelling to a population that was quickly abandoning tradition. Drashot LeDarot is a series that even half a century after these sermons were first delivered remain as compelling as ever. Forwards include, as you heard, Dr. Meir Soloveitchik and Rabbi Jacob J. Schachter, who was just our guest here on By the Book. I do want to remind everybody that Magid is offering to our listeners a special for Nachum Segal Network listeners. If you order a subscription to the print edition of the Koren Talmud Bavli, if you order a subscription to the print edition of the Koren Talmud Bavli, you get a free digital edition. The digital is compatible on all mobile devices, has a $10 value for each volume. It's perfect for travel or to print before Shabbat. Go to korenpub.com, korenpub.com. Use the promo code JM in the AM at checkout, and you will enjoy that incredible special. So again, all Nachum Segal Network listeners, when you order a subscription to the print edition of the Koren Talmud Bavli, you get a free digital edition. The digital is compatible on all mobile devices, has a $10 value for each volume, perfect for travel or to print before Shabbat. Go to korenpub.com, korenpub.com, and use the promo code JM in the AM at checkout to take advantage. Also, on our network, we are going to be giving away free copies of Drashot LeDarot Exodus, the second volume of the a series on the speeches and the lectures on the sermons of Rabbi Lamb. We are going to be giving away free copies, so I suggest you pay careful attention to JM and the AM and other programming that we do each and every day here at the Nachum Segal Network so that you can go ahead and hopefully win one of those copies. I'll have more coming up here at the Nachum Segal Network as we continue And I'll have my closing words regarding this week's program and a reminder about those offers from Koren all coming up. Keep it right here at jmnam.org and NahumSiegel.com. This is the Nahum Siegel Network. That's Baruch Levine. You're listening to By the Book. It is a another amazing edition of By the Book, featuring in this case Rabbi Jacob J. Schachter, University Professor of Jewish History and Jewish Thought and Senior Scholar at the Center for the Jewish Future, Yeshiva University. I want to thank Rabbi Schachter for joining us. He is he writes the foreword in the upcoming Drashot LeDarot on Exodus, on Shmos, which is going to be coming out in the month of December. And we're going to be giving away free copies. I ask everybody to pay careful attention to JM and the AM and the entire Nahum Segal Network. You never know when you may win a free copy to the Drashot LeDarot, the Drashot LeDarot Exodus book, which will be hot off the press real soon. Don't forget the special for all Nahum Segal Network listeners. Order a subscription to the print edition of the Koren Talmud Bavli. Get a free digital edition. The digital edition is compatible on all mobile devices, as a $10 value for each volume. It's perfect for travel or to print before Shabbat. Go to korenpub.com, korenpub.com. Use the promo code JM and the AM at checkout. And you'll be able to enjoy the Koren Talmud Bavli, not just in print form, but in digital form as well. I want to thank our friends at Koren Publishers for making this this show possible. Remind everybody to keep tuned to the Nahum Segal Network, where a brilliant live lunch will be upcoming if you're listening on Tuesday. And where we have full programming all day long on our stream at jmnam.org and nahumsegal.com. By the Book is brought to you by Koren Publishers. And again, we thank them for sponsoring this hour here at the Nahum Segal Network. Keep it here at the network at jmnam.org and nahumsegal.com. Da 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 da